The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 473. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
There he is. And Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
All right, people, we're back, man. No Brian action. For a good reason, which I'll let him say it when he's back. And we don't know what's going on with Chris. He may have, enacted the Odin sleep, you know, as is the case being a father and all that, you know.
Oh, yeah. He let us know.
He did?
He put it in the chat.
Okay, yep. I missed it. All right, cool. All right, so we got the full cast here. We actually didn't get too many questions tonight. So if you want to ask us anything live during the show, please do. If not, this might be a short show. We'll see what happens. But thankfully, our first question is very, very, very long, you know, so that'll take up some time. This is the return of one of our old schoolers, Mr. Him Deal, people. He is back. Pretty sure some of the old school guys remember that name. So again, he hasn't been here for a while, so hence the long lead up to this question. So he goes, yo, it's Him Deal. Been away for a few years, but I have been listening to the last couple of episodes. Oh, man, you boys sound like angry, bitter old video game men with little you all are enjoying about gaming. I'm crossing the street to stay off y'all's video game lawn. You all knew this was coming, so why the surprise? LOL. Y'all talked about this 6 years ago, and it has now come to pass. Yeah, kind of, you know, the downward spiral of gaming. Anyway, he continues. This is very interesting stuff. My perspective is very different from what it was 4 years ago. I have checked out all the way of keeping tabs on larger gaming news and trends. I don't know what's coming 9 times out of 10, and I found out about games from friends' texts many times a day or two before release. And yet, I've been gaming nonstop a lot these last few years because, one, I rarely buy full-price games, and two, there are always games that are new to me, which have been fun games to play, and PS Plus has been amazing to me in this regard. There have been many subjectively fun games I've missed last gen and this gen, and playing catch-up has been both fun and relatively cheap. As we all know, there's always a new gamer that never played GTA 5. I just started that game for the first time in 2024. Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
Oh, damn.
So, yeah. Okay. So,
there you go.
There you go. It's another one, you know.
NPD.
I just started playing GTA 5 for the first time in 2024 on a PS5, and I only downloaded it because it was free. The online has been fun with friends. Again, I apologize for the lead-in, but I've been away for a few years. All good, brother. All good. So he goes, so my question is, what older games, if any, have you all enjoyed playing across any platform, PC, console, phone, over the last year? I know them are dirty words to Tony. Yeah, phone games, that's not game. I ask for people like me who are generally behind and would appreciate putting some games on our radar. I'll share a handful of mine that I've been catching up on. Moonlighter, Sea of Stars. Rich, there you go, man. Sea of Stars. Plague Tale Innocence, Wild Hearts, Wizard of Legend, Indivisible, One Chandra, Subnautica, Sub-Zero, and Scarlet Nexus. So I guess the heart of his question is, like, what are some games that we like that, you know, would be good for people who generally don't keep up with gaming and they just want to play something cool, you know?
Yo, Tony, the one game that you mispronounce, that's Onichan, bro.
Oh, okay. Shows you that what I know, man. He spelled it. If he would have spelled with the I would have said it correctly, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I feel like Brett and Adam are some of the best when it comes to these types of questions. But I'll go first because I do have one.
Yeah.
And last year, I raved and raved about this game. And it wasn't a game that came out last year, per se. Cyberpunk. I waited to play that game. The overhyped, broken mess at release date that couldn't be played on lesser systems. And on PC, it was kind of all over the place, even though it was the most stable. I decided to wait. Even though Tony liked it, I was like, yeah, I know I'm going to love this game. And because it's got everything that I like about video games is CD Projekt Red. Mm-hmm. But I waited till last year, 2023, to actually play the game. Almost three years after its release, because I wanted to play the game and I wanted to play the DLC, Phantom Liberty that was coming out that year. And I'm glad I waited, because it's one of the best games I've ever played. I would say that's probably in my top 20. That's one example for me. But you know, I'm not usually, you know, like you mentioned, I think some of us here don't really go back to playing games like that. I think me and Tony are probably the worst offenders out of the bunch. But
because of that, I'm old. I don't really have an answer to this. I only play new games. That's all I really have time for. It would be nice to play. So like during the pandemic was the one time where I was like, oh, let me play some other shit. I got time now. And I finally got to play Final Fantasy VI. Fucking amazing game, you know, but I don't think that game counts, because I'm pretty sure everybody has played that, you know. But like recent horror games that you may have missed out on. I actually did play this one the year after it came out. So I'm going to qualify that as yes, it counts. And yes, this was also during the pandemic. Yakuza Like a Dragon. That game is fucking awesome. If you haven't played it, play it. I played it a year after it released, so I was late to the party, but the game was fun, man. It was great. So definitely go play that. Rich, I'll go to you, man. What are some late to the party games that might be good for people like him to be able to check out?
Well, first and foremost, I have to give you respect for mentioning Sea of Stars, because that game is fire. I know it kind of got overshadowed last year with all the other games that dropped, but fully understood. I definitely have to think about that a little bit more, because, you know, just like with you, Tony, I play a lot of the more recent stuff, and that is also a good and a bad thing, because obviously as you're reviewing stuff that's more recent, you're going to miss a couple of games that come out from time to time, and then you're going to want to try to have to come back to it at some point later if you have the time. Last year was a stacked year for games, so there's a lot of games that I need to get back to playing that I didn't really get a chance to check out. I need to think about that. I got to think about that a little bit.
All right. Just real quick, then I'll go to the breakfast. I'm pretty sure he has a couple of recommendations. Rich, you and I are kind of in the same boat. It's like we could only really review a certain amount of games or play a certain amount of games for review, and they usually tend to be the big ones, because the big ones are the ones that are going to get traffic, you know? So, so we're kind of locked in with that. Go ahead, Carlos, and then Brett.
I got another one. Also, and Manny's ears will perk up. I played Gravity Rush after the fact. I think it was a couple of years after the remaster, and came out on the PS Vita. On my Vita. And it's a great, man, that's a great game. Whatever happened to that studio, man? Gravity Rush is one of those games.
Brett, go ahead, man. What are some late to the party games this guy and other people should check out?
That really depends on, like, how long away how long you've been away. I know I said a few years, but like that can mean different things to different people. I assume you've played Elden Ring. If not, prepare yourself. There's a big wave and there's a DLC coming. So one of the best things about, and I hate to say like live service, like think about Elden Ring game is it Elden Ring and Souls games tend to happen kind of as a community. So there's something a little bit magical about getting on the train at the same time everybody else does, as opposed to when you come in later, everybody else has kind of run through the game and they're now like trying to bleed through into your world to give you a hard time. So it becomes a more antagonistic experience, which has its place, but like there's nothing like the joy of jolly cooperation as everybody's kind of trying to just discover the same stuff and not die. So since the DLC is coming out, you know, shit's like an eclipse, man. It doesn't happen that often. It's magical when it does. I just highly recommend jumping on that. let's see. A lot of these aren't going to be super original because, like, I've been raving about a lot of these games. Remnant 2, if you haven't played Remnant 2, play Remnant 2. Oh, my God, play Remnant 2. That game is fucking amazing. What else? If you haven't played Baldur's Gate, you absolutely need to play Baldur's Gate. It's a return to kind of the best things of modern era of older styles of gaming kind of brought into a modern age. We're seeing a lot of games that are really kind of love letters to the kind of games that they are, as well as the things like a lot of things like Diablo, which are just, you know, shameless cash grabs by people who don't even play their own game. But there are other games out there that, you know, you can really tell people are enjoying. Let's see what else. Hi-Fi Rush. Hi-Fi Rush was made with a lot of love, and it obviously shows. It also kind of like depends, like, do you like this kind of emergent, that we have several emergent genres of games that even if you've been away for a few years might be kind of foreign to you, to where you're like, oh, like Battle Royale is just Fortnite, right? Like, no, dude, bro, it's an entire thing now. But on a higher note, my opinion, so is survival games. Survival building type games have really come a long way since, you know, even DayZ or even fucking Ark, man. Like, there's, you know, now it's really bleeding into a lot of stuff like Grounded, like Power World, both of which are fucking excellent games. If you haven't played Sea of Thieves, it's coming to PlayStation, so here's your fucking chance. Which is actually, honestly, Sea of Thieves is what Skull and Bones wants to be. It's when you think, like, oh, Skull and Bones, this is what, why isn't Skull and Bones a game where I can get off my ship and fight other people? And why does it just happen in a big persistent world with it, you know, encourages PvP instead of instanced smaller PvP runs? That's Sea of Thieves. That is literally what Sea of Thieves is. And I've never seen a better one-to-one kind of sailing game on that. So, like, it's, if for no other reason, try it, because you may hate it. But also, it's kind of cool, like, having to drop the sails and man the cannons and do all this kind of different stuff as you would on a pirate ship. And it's even better with friends. And since you don't really have any kind of leveling up, it's mostly cosmetic and, in fact, everything you get on it is kind of cosmetic. So there's no real difference between a level one and a level, I don't know, whatever, 1 million player, other than people who have played the game longer. So I kind of like that on a personal note. So you can take a break, come back. Nothing's really changed. There's no leveling or, you know, it's a very casual kind of fun game. If you haven't played Fallout 76, that shit is polished to a fucking shine at this point. It's exactly what you would want it to be. Everybody plays and goes, oh shit, what's that?
Yo, Bert, I just got to butt in. Just mention Absolver, and we got the Brett Bingo card.
You know.
Okay. Yeah. That's too long ago, though. Like, it's, my dreams of Absolver are fucking dashed, man. It's, which is fucking, bro, like, I'm so mad. Like, okay, that makes me madder than anything, because I played that game way too much. I made my entire own fighting style, and I went out at a 100-0 win streak.
Oh, wow.
Which you would think would be awesome, but is just in actuality super unsatisfying. Like, I was like, wow, okay, so I'm that guy. All right, fine.
Brett is like Akuma. He's like, who will face me?
I actually went and I found there's a very specific NPC in one part of the game that you track down, and you have to, like, learn this one very specific move that he very rarely does. It's like the secret move in the game, and it is a low damage, almost zero damage bitch slap. And it is exactly as fucking hilarious as you might think it would be. So I just started that as my combo opener. So I just, like, circle around people and kind of bitch slap them a little bit. I teach people around, you know, reversals and, you know, like, kind of give them a short tutorial about, like, hey, man, this is how you can do some things. And then just bury them. But even then, like, there weren't enough people playing to give me a correct challenge. And I can't help but feel like that would have been different if, say, there were, like, Asians cross servers. Like, if I were up against, like, the fucking Japanese servers, like, I would have been toast. I have no doubt of that. But I was just amazed, like, because Tony will attest to, like, you usually get on a fighting game, you're getting stomped into the ground. It was so weird being on the other side of it, and not nearly as cool as you'd think. But yes, the game was amazing, innovative, yeah. Even But no, we can't have nice things.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because that's literally my like experience with Street Fighter. Like there was, at least for me, there was no middle ground. Either I completely demolished whoever I was fighting or I got fucking stomped on. No middle ground. It's insane, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, I guess there goes an even match, I guess.
Yeah.
It's fine.
They're, like, it was very rare. Anyway. It was like, oh shit, we're evenly matched, you know? Like, usually within the first, like, I would say 30 seconds, you'd know who's going to win. Like, I go in there like, oh, yeah, I got this guy. Then, or something like, oh, shit, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and, you know, that game, like, it had a good idea. But, like, the problem with that, even most of those PvP matches I did were in a PvP arena. And in a game where you can seamlessly bleed into other people's world a la Dark Souls, and in theory run across a street fight in the streets and then have a street fight in the streets that is a no rules just kind of brawl and other people could just jump in and kick your ass. Like, that thing that you know, like, fighting games kind of simulate, it was actually, like, kind of capturing that, or had the potential to, but it so rarely did. And I'm not really sure if the answer was to force people into, like, open-world PvP encounters or what. Thinking that to myself, yeah, that's probably going to be it. I know people aren't necessarily into that, but you know what? You're simulating getting accosted on the street. I don't think that's really consensual or voluntarily in theme either. So, that's, you know, I'd love to see an open world, kind of street brawling game or even just fighting game. I'd love to see these things kind of like go seamless. And I think Street Fighter kind of did a seamless thing where, like, you ran around and got into fights.
Yeah, Street Fighter VI did, like, the World Tour mode. Like, you're running around. But, you know, you got to challenge the NPC, though. It's not like it just happens. Like, was actually, you know, sometimes they you know, there's NPCs you can challenge, and then there's, like, thugs that do jump you. And then it just, like, transitions to the normal 2D fighting game screen, you know?
Well, and that'd be fine even if you just, like, showed up on another person's screen and challenged them, and they had to be like, nah, son, not now. Like, that would even be fine, because there's a small amount of shame in just turning down a fight. Like, if you don't want to fuck with that shit, that's fine. But also, like, I want to see a kind of more blended PvP single-player experience, because, like, you lose something when it's just completely voluntary opt-in PvP. And I don't know how to make that sound better. But, like, that's the way that it's always been. Like, when other players can jump you, when you're having to run through a dangerous area, when you're trying to, like, you know, get out of the dark zone, or you get somebody invaded in PvP, like, it's those integrated experiences that oftentimes I think are really cool. And I'd really like to see that in an open-world fighting game. But I doubt it'd be the kind of game that you, Tony, would call a fighting game.
It depends on how the fighting actually commences.
I don't know how to do fighting. I like, other than like something like Absolver, which I thought did fighting mechanics in a brawling type setting.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I thought was really kind of very innovative about it. But it did so in a weird stance kind of way, which I was like, you know what? It worked, though. It really did work. But the problem is, it's, fighting games aren't so much a fighting style as like a setup or a world style kind of, like, I don't know if you can have multiple people fighting in a 3D space without you considering it a brawler.
Yeah, it would just instantly be a brawler at that point, you know. But that doesn't mean it can't be competitive, though, you know.
Yeah, I think that's, we classify it as different things. I just classify it as, like, if the fighting system is fine-tuned enough, I'm going to call it more than brawlers, A and B. Fighting more than that.
Yeah. I think there's space for, like, a middle ground there, though. You know, between a brawler and a fighting game.
I would love to see it, especially if it were open world online. I'm not usually a person to say those words, because, like, I do like those things, but I don't think we need more of those in the world for the most part. But yes. Is anybody else out there with me, or am I the only person that wants this game? We just walk around and, like, either jump or challenge people to fights, level up, gain new fighting abilities, build
a custom character. Didn't Anarchy Reigns basically do that? Because I know Riku loved that game, but...
Dude, there are so many games that come so close. Yeah. It's kind of like a Star Citizen kind of thing. Like, there's a game there that people want, that they have been asking for fucking ever, that has never been delivered to them. And you know, I think Power World just made that game in one instance. And that's why I'm just like, bro, just like, listen to what the gaming community has just been yelling about for decades about, be like, you know, it'd be a really cool game, this. And then people never do it. And I gotta think it's because people can't figure out how to do it, but at the same time, I see so many people getting close. Just make the damn thing.
All right, there you go. Shout out to you, Himdeal. Hope you'll be sticking around with us more. Go ahead.
Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got my games now. I need some time to think.
And also, Manny, do you have any games you want to list off after Rich?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so you go next. All right, go ahead, Rich, if you're ready.
Okay, first and foremost, I'm going to take this shot because I know we have been talking a lot about Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. So let me tell you, Himdeal, if you're thinking about playing that trash, don't. Play Guardians of the Galaxy instead.
Yes.
Because that game is fantastic. Yes. Oh, yeah. That's what I recommend that. I know he also mentioned he's playing Plague's Tale. I did start playing a Plague's Tale Requiem, which is the sequel that came out. That's also a great game. And of course, lastly, because you guys mentioned brawlers and fighting games, Sifu. That Ooh. Game, you 1,000%. Yeah. Yes, you need to play that game. I know Torrance Davis, he's probably the only other person I know that was really excited for that game, but that game is fire. I highly recommend you play that.
You know who made that game?
Oh, yes. Yes. Slow clap. That's how you pronounce them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The makers of Absolver.
Nice.
Yes. There you go. Yes. Yes.
All right. Manny, what are some recent under the radar games he may want to catch up on?
Recent under the radar games. I don't know if it's under the radar, but I did catch really up games enjoy,
that you may have missed. Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed the cat game.
Stray.
Stray. Yeah, I personally liked that one. It was a really fun one. I wouldn't say Kaifa Rush is a under the radar game, but I would say that was a good one. Alternatively, I will always suggest Gravity Rush Run 1 and 2. Those are a little bit old. Let's see. What else did I pull? What will be another under the radar type of game? You know what? Evil West. I would say I'll put that on there. That's kind of a fun throwback sort of game toward the era of games when they were only 10 hours long and didn't cost nearly as much. You could actually, if you have PlayStation Plus currently, you can get that game as part of their one of their services. I don't remember which one. I can't remember if it's part of Essential Professional or whoever, what's it, Mega, whatever they want to call it, but it's on there if you have one of the tiers. Fighting games, not really under the radar, but I would say, you know, the Guilty Gear franchise, Xrd, or even the new one. Really great games. If you like those sorts of 2D feeling anime fighter type games, you know, kind of harkens back to the when Capcom wasn't doing 3D model-y looking character games. What was another one? That's all that comes to mind right now.
Hey, man, you got a motor going back there, like a generator?
No, it's my fucking tablet that's fucking going stupid.
Whoa.
It's a tablet?
That's a tablet making that noise?
Yes, this fucking thing, this Wacom tablet, for some reason, the fan keeps on going on the fritz, and it sounds like it's a fucking a jet engine. So yeah, even more noises to come from my side of the thing. So I'll be muting myself right now.
That's wild. All right, let's move on here. Mr. Villa Kyle in the house. By the way, just real quick, I didn't have time to edit tonight's questions. I was playing Final Fantasy, just full disclosure. So forgive any grammatical errors. I did.
How dare you, good sir.
Anyway, so Kavila Kyle's question. Microsoft owns Windows and Xbox. Why have they not developed a UI to run Windows games on Xbox as of yet? The line between PC and console is so small now. I'm sure they could get a Windows build on Xbox that plays PC games on a medium setting. Then this story of console exclusives would be a moot point. Are there legal or technical reasons I'm missing? Phil won't have to ask why Helldivers isn't on Xbox if it is on PC. Also, the Steam Deck can sideload Windows and play games, and it is lower powered than a Series X. What am I missing? I think this is an overlooked cheat code to get theoretically get God of War 2018 on Xbox if they wanted. Well, they could. It's all the same thing even with the PlayStation 5. It's not the same. It's not different hardware. Carlos, I kind of want you to answer it because I'm kind of confused. I'm like, hold on, but Xbox games already play on Windows and Xbox, so I don't understand what he thinks is the problem. Like, why do we need Windows on Xbox? I don't get that.
No, I think the question is more towards, you know, why doesn't the Xbox have sort of a Windows layer on it? Because if it had a Windows layer on it, that means that you could play all of the PC games instead of just the Xbox dedicated
games.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So, but I mean, okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because whiny fucking Xbox fanboys would lose their goddamn minds and quit the brand.
We're already doing that. Oh, now the next thing that these guys are harping on is, like, you know, they're basically coming after quote-unquote Xbox influencers that are saying it's okay to have your games on other platforms. Like, how come you're not saying Final Fantasy needs to be on Xbox? Yeah. They brought up the old fake neutral nonsense. Now they're saying, why aren't you demanding PlayStation exclusives and Nintendo exclusives on Xbox? Like, you got to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I know, Brett. I know.
Yeah, I'm
fucking dumb.
I feel like the reason why they don't do this is because it'll be just a half measure. You would have to go all the way in. And if you go all the way in, then you're essentially just releasing a PC, like a pre-built PC. And the issue with that is if you release a pre-built PC with Xbox parts, you know, Xbox Series X or Xbox Series S, then it's a shit PC.
Okay.
So that's true. You're sort of stuck between both worlds, and you're not really one. And you know, the reason why they do Xboxes is for the environment, so that they can get you in there, and you have to pay for their subscriptions or services, and it's curated to sell everything Xbox. And because the games are curated towards to working on the machine, so you know every game that's released works on an Xbox. And even though the Xbox is now severely underpowered compared to PCs these days, you know, the games are developed and tested and refined to utilize the hardware better than anybody. So that's some of the reasons. I'm pretty sure there's more that I can't think of right now, but some of the main ones, I think it's just the fact that they might as well just make it a PC instead of an Xbox. Why even have an Xbox UI?
Yeah, and if you want that, get one of the Windows 11 handhelds. They're basically just PCs in handheld form, you know?
Right, or just get a PC.
You can just do that, get a PC. But a good question, regardless. All right, so that was his question. Next up, Cuban Boss. So I'm going to start with a comment he has first. Some good stuff here. He goes, not a question, but I wanted to say that I felt where Brett was coming from with the whole learning to read from Zelda. I had a similar experience. I had Zelda on an NES while living in Cuba, and my dad would not help me translate. He would just hand me this huge ass yellow dictionary and told me to look it up. Although he did show me how to look up words. My teachers in school would all ask my parents how I could sleep through English class, but know it all. Great memories that I owe that game and my father also. I miss the more traditional Zelda style. Though, and while not a fan of the weapon fragility system, I still enjoy them. Cool. So he learned English through Zelda. Cool.
Heck yeah, man.
Good stuff.
Tony, that's not exactly how you learn, but I mean, you learned through like games and TV, right?
Oh, yeah. Literally a summer of watching cartoons, I learned English, you know, because I was still before I even played video games. Because I came to this country 1987, and in July, and I started going to school in September that year. That summer, I learned English just watching fucking Thundercats and Transformers and all the cartoons, you know. But by the time I got to school, I was fluent in English. Ain't that something, you know?
Man, it's crazy how when you're younger, you're more of a sponge when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Like, it was crazy. I didn't have a tutor. They were even going to like give me like an English tutor or whatever. Didn't need it. You know, I just watched cartoons, man. It's crazy.
Were you in the ESL classes?
Nope. I was in regular classes from the jump, you know, like they get like, they sent me like a tutor for 2 weeks at home before I started school. And then he's like, yeah, he doesn't really need this. I was just watching cartoons, man. You know? Man, I wish I was that smart now, man. I'm fucking dumb compared to when I was a kid, you know? I can't retain nothing, you know? That's probably because it's all filled with nonsense, you know?
You're like, yo, little me, give me some of them brain cells.
Give me some of them brain cells, man. Your brain's growing. Mine's is rotten, you know?
Oh, good, man.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, first question here from Mr. Cuban Boss. With the death suicide of Suicide Squad and WB really counting on those sales to keep earnings for the year, how egregious do you think microtransactions are about to get for Mortal Kombat 1? Since technically that will probably be their live service game for the year now. Oh, shit. I didn't think about that. Rich, I want to see you jump in here, man. Do you think Mortal Kombat's going to have to carry WB for like a while because of Suicide Squad shin to bed?
Well, that's an excellent question. And yes, they are going to have to carry WB for a while. Now, they've already had some controversy with the microtransactions because they had the holiday fatalities that they had that people had to purchase.
Yeah.
And they got some backlash, so they decided, okay, we need to change the strategy. So obviously, they still have DLC characters coming out. Peacemaker is coming out this week. And then, of course, they have Homelander coming as well. Later, you know, I guess in March or April, I'm not sure. They didn't announce the release date yet. But to answer the question, I mean, obviously they're working on an expansion for Mortal Kombat 1 like they did for 11 because there's more story to tell. So if that actually comes out later this year, which I have no idea, it could come out next year. I think they're really going to rely on that to really get them through the rest of the year. I know they're working on some other games, but we haven't heard any other announcements of something else coming. So I definitely expect them to try to get as much money as possible out of everything they have dropping this year. Of course, they have movies dropping this year, too. But for the gaming stuff, yeah, Mortal Kombat is the only thing they got for this year so far.
That's crazy. Yeah, because Suicide Squad, they expected it to be it. And obviously it wasn't it. You know, crazy. All right. By the way, guys, if you're listening to us live, we only have 3 more questions to go. We didn't get a lot this week. So if you want to ask us something now, do it. Otherwise, it's going to be a very short show. Another question from Mr. Cuban Boss. With the drought the PS5 has pretty much had on first party titles this generation, is anyone in the crew going to rush to get the PS6 at launch day, or will you be a bit more conservative and wait a bit, assuming we're all alive and still gaming as much? Man, I'm going to assume you're going to do what you did with the PS5. Just wait, right?
Yeah, just like anything. Just wait until there's something that I really want to play. But I mean, I would say I wouldn't say buying a PS5 was a mistake. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's kind of gone into dormancy after I've completed Spider-Man. I mean, I'm playing Evil West right now, which is fun. But I mean, that's a PS4 game. You know, so it's essentially just become a glorified PS 4.5.
Brett, I want to go to you because I know how you feel about PlayStation this generation. Are you going to wait for PS5 if PS6, if you even get it at all?
This will be the first time in the entire history of PlayStation that I haven't gotten one to launch.
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
Yeah, but I feel like that's still a big fucking, like, how many years is that? I've been buying PlayStation at launch for like, what, 25, 30 years? And this is the time when I'm just like, nah, I'm done.
Yeah, that's not good, man. That says a lot. As for me, I don't have a choice. I got to get it day one because that's kind of part of the job. But if I was just a regular consumer, I would wait too. I'd probably just be like, fuck, I'm just going to be a PC gamer now, you know? This console generation has been extremely disappointing, man. If it wasn't for work, like, I would have no reason to own this fucking console. I'm just being honest. Even the games I do like, like Final Fantasy. That's one of the few saving graces, and that's going to come to PC eventually. Kind of goes back to what our boy Himdale said. It's like, yo, you could enjoy gaming and not play games day one. Like, obviously, half of us here, you know, me and Rich specifically, have to play games on day one. That's our job. But there's nothing wrong with just doing what Brian does and Manny does. Like, I'll get to it when I get to it, you know? And Brett, you too, you do that. Like, you know, I'll get to it when I get to it, you know?
I mean, I've kind of changed to be that way. And I'll be honest, I'm happier that way.
Cause, yeah, because of Game Pass, you know?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, like, just chasing the trends, that's more frustrating than just, like, hanging around, you know? Like, do we really need to sit? Do I really need to sit on the forefront of things? I mean, I lasted most of this generation without being on the forefront, you know, of games. And to be honest, the most of the games that were available on PlayStation 4, you know, I was still able to partake. You know, Stray, I still played on the 4. You know, Spider-Man, Miles Morales, still played that on a 4. So. You know, just no harm in waiting, to be honest.
Yep.
And I, you know, granted, you know, obviously with you guys, you know, you're on Twitter, you're on those spaces, and you know, every single person on there, as soon as they complete the game, they'll fucking throw the ending up, you know, for everyone all to see.
YouTube, I'm not looking as well. At all of that. You know, YouTube, you know, as
YouTube
well, man.
As well.
But and all you need is a thumbnail.
I remember, man, when God of War 2018, at launch day. People already spoiling the ending on YouTube, thumbnails and everything, you know?
Yeah. But I've managed to remain, but then again, I'm also not, I don't get messed up too much by spoilers for the plain reason that I don't understand the context of how something got there. So I'm like, okay, yeah, you could tell me the ending or something. And I'll just be like, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah. So, similarly, we were asked about, are you going to get the Nintendo Switch 2 last week? That, I had the opposite answer. I'm like, nope, I don't need for work. Fuck that shit. You know, I'm a console gamer. Console and PC, but Nintendo, you know, I've always said Nintendo's always doing its own thing. Listen, mm-hmm. you got to give me credit. I gave him a shot. I gave Nintendo a shot after like 20, 30 years or whatever. I went back. And this, still not for me.
The same question with the idea, because we're talking about PlayStation 6, right?
Yeah.
What about PlayStation? What about the rumored PlayStation 5 Pro?
Yeah, like, I'll get it too.
To you be don't honest, need that one, like
no, I don't. But you
to
know,
be honest,
but I already promised my nephew I'm going to give him my PS5 with if the PS5 Pro comes out, you know.
For me, to be honest, like, you know, I've already made my investment in one version. I don't see my now. If the one that was coming out was the Pro, right, the one that the new Slim was the Pro, I would have possibly done that. But you know, Sony doesn't go about saying these things beforehand to let you know, like, hey, we got this one and we got this one.
Yeah.
So when that other one, if that other one drops, it'll be like, all right, and then you have a bunch of people going, oh fuck,
yeah,
you know.
What about you, Carlos? PS6.
I'll get three of them.
Hey, you know, yeah, and get our boy Fergus Mills is gonna hook it up too. You know,
I need to make the sign of the devil, man. to be honest, you know, things have changed. I don't really, you know, I would get really hyped up for new technology. I mean, Tony, you know, Tony is like this also, but yeah. I mean, he also got the job stuff, but yeah, I don't think I'm not gonna buy a new Xbox. I sold the last Xbox I'll ever buy because I don't need it. I got a PC and it plays all the Xbox games and got Game Pass Ultimate.
Yeah, that's why I skip Xbox this generation. Like, I don't need it. I got a PC. You know.
Mm-hmm. And then PlayStation, it's gotta have a fucking killer app day one. If it doesn't, I'm not gonna buy it day one because. The PlayStation 5 has released with a bunch of tech demos and remakes, and it really didn't have anything, and it's still technically hasn't had that much.
Go ahead, Rick.
So Carlos, are you saying here live on tonight's broadcast that The Last of Us Part 3 as a launch game, that will not be enough to get you to get a PS6?
I mean, if it's a PS6 exclusive, then yes. I would get it. I would get it for that, but it's probably not. It would probably be a cross-gen game, and we'll see. We'll see. You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not an automatic as I used to. You know, back last generation, it was automatic. It didn't even matter what the hell was going to come out with it. I was going to get a PlayStation, I was going to get an Xbox, and I was going to get a Switch. And now it's like I'm not going to get an Xbox anytime. And PlayStation is really under heavy scrutiny. And if they decide to do the same thing, just do a PS5 launch all over again, then I'm good. I doubt there's going to be a pandemic that's going to make the console almost impossible to get for the first 3 years, but we'll see.
or inflate profits.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we have a question related to that. But yeah, Rich, what about you, man? Will you be getting the PS6 at launch?
Much like Carlos, I will be taking a very hard look at this lineup because I don't want the cross-gen BS. I want an exclusive title available at launch, and not like what Sony says. Okay, yeah, it's going to be, they consider launch within the first year. No, I mean the same time the console drops. But yeah, I definitely will get the PS6. There's no doubt about that. But I definitely will be looking at that lineup, because if it's a cross-gen game I could just play on PS5, I'll just play that, and I'll wait until they have a game coming out specifically for PS6 to have it.
And I think that's a very important point to make. It's like, you know, because obviously the other reason we would want a PS6 is because we're hosting a gaming podcast. But if the games are available on PS5, you're good. You're not missing out on anything, you know?
Exactly.
Again, I owned a PS5 since day one, and even now, I'm still like, you don't really need this right now, you know? I definitely said you don't need it at all before. Now, you know, there's a couple more games. Final Fantasy is so good, but it's only one game, you know? And in retrospect, even though I enjoyed it at the time, now looking back, I'm like, Spider-Man 2 could have been better, you know? Gameplay's still dope, don't get me wrong. Graphics are legit, but there's some little things in there that I'm like, in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of, but it's also a problem I have with modern games, if you know what I mean, Rich. But I'm not going to get into that, you know? Anyway, so there you go. What are we doing here? Kishak. Real quick, shout out to Otaku Man 5000. You know,
my man. What up, Otaku Man?
Puffin Cloud, what's going on, brother? He goes, PC is where it's at. You can save money and still get the same experience and even better. Yeah, that's the thing about PC. It's like jumping in, it's a big investment, but after that, man, games are fucking cheap. You know, even like on launch, they're generally cheaper if you know where to look. Legally too, by the way. You know, this is the first generation that I was not an early adopter. PS5 generation. Yeah, I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you at all. Kishak, I'm going to answer your questions next. He goes, cross-gen. So you say, yeah, I know, man. I agree. I don't want to agree, but I agree. You know,
neither Sony nor Microsoft believes in generations.
Again, man, listen. Say what you will about Nintendo. You know me, I don't like Nintendo. But those motherfuckers got exclusives. A lot of them, you know? A lot of exclusives, you know? Anyway.
Hey, Blitz, you watching this?
Yeah, Blitz, where you at, bruh? You know? See, the one time I say something nice about Nintendo, he's not here, you know? Anyway, let's answer some Kishak's questions here. This is kind of related to what we were just speaking about. With the way this generation is going, for some people, it feels like a lost generation, especially to Tony. This is very true. I specifically called it the lost generation. Here's the question. But would it still have felt like a lost generation if the pandemic never happened in the first place? I still think people haven't fully comprehended how much everything got pushed back because of the Rona, and the aftermath is still years in the making. Oh, yeah, you're 100% right about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think it wouldn't have been a lost generation per se, but it would have been last gen part two, where basically you start off with a bunch of cross gen games, and then like during the middle, you get a bunch of shit. I think if the Rona hadn't happened, this generation probably would have really got it started in earnest probably in 2022, like a year earlier, because it really got started last year in 2023. So I don't think I would have I don't think I would have called it a lost generation. I think I would have called it like, oh, it's a repeat of last gen, you know. But I do. The other thing I wanted to say is like, I want to be perfectly clear that when I speak about these things, I am not dismissing the effects of the Rona. Absolutely not, you know. But I have to call a spade a spade. You know, I can't just be like, oh, yeah, there's not a lot of games. But we have to take this into consideration. It doesn't need to be said. We know the Rona happened. And it caused this generation to be lost. You know, you can't really separate the two there. So it is part of it. Like, the Rona caused this to be a lost generation. No doubt about it. But there's other factors that caused that, too. Like all this cross-gen shit. And remakes and remasters as well. You know, which, like you said, Kishak, and I agree, I don't think that's going to stop. They make a lot of fucking money, you know, and it's easy. Yeah, obviously there are cases like Final Fantasy VII Remake where they put effort into that shit. It's a new game, basically, you know? Three new games, if you think about it. By the way, remember, what was it Nomura, right? He's the director behind the games. Remember when he originally said, like, oh, it would take about 15 years to make a Final Fantasy VII remake, and we thought he was crazy? Technically, it's going to be 15 years by the time these games all come out.
Oh, it's because they fucking waited forever because they were forced to do it because they didn't want to ride their own coattails or whatever the fuck reason it was.
Yeah. And Brett, my theory is Remake 3, that'll be on PS6, you know?
Yeah, they shot themselves in the foot on this one by like refusing to want to roll over. And like I get it, like it is I guess partially the run in the sense that it held up production, which it slowed technically adoption towards the new console. But that really shouldn't matter for the titles that are the flagship titles historically released in the first 2 years. Those things are kind of evergreen tentpole titles historically. You know, your Zeldas, for instance, the things that are system sellers and draw people, and those kind of have, like I said, an evergreen element. I think the thing that really bothers me about this whole thing is that companies will not look at this and see, at least in my opinion, what is the writing on the wall, and be like, "Hey, it's weird. It's almost like these games that are like made and given the time to bake and the funding and are headed by talented and creative individuals, these games have become these evergreen titles that become fan favorites for years and years. It's almost like those are the ones people still want to play a decade later and are still selling copies. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, I don't know, man, if you give the people the resources to make quality products instead of trying to squeeze it for every fucking drop that it's worth, then like, people tend to appreciate it, and it tends to sell better and for longer, and have a more pleased and pleased place amongst the fan base. It's and I honestly would have been like, but that's, you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to treat a game with respect and dignity and do the best I can and expect it to be a success. But you know what? Fuck that. I'm sick of giving in to the haters. Like Larian did that shit. I've seen a bunch of studios be like, hey, we're going to treat our properties and our fans with respect, and that pays in fucking dividends. But we don't have people understanding that yet. Instead, they're like, how can we force people to play our game for 2 years? Oh, here's a thing. Make it good.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else have any thoughts on the whole lost generation thing? Actually, Carlos, I want your thoughts on this. I know you and I have kind of are equal minds about this generation.
Yeah, I don't know. I would push back a little bit on the comment saying that the pandemic would have changed anything for the generation. I still feel like the generation would have been the same. It's just delayed by a year or two. The whole thing with this generation is that they learned, I mean, they saw what happened the previous generation, the PS4, Xbox One generation, where it was nothing but remakes and remasters at the beginning. And they were like, wow, we can make a remake and it's the equivalent of a release. You know, people treat it as the equivalent of a release, like The Last of Us One remake. It's like it's part of our, you know, it's part of our plan. We're gonna put it in these shows, in our press conferences, and you know, it's part of our game plan, or you know, our calendar. And people ate that shit up. got a whole bunch of remakes, not a lot of substance. And then it took a while. Probably took till what 2017 to get good. And then it was kind of like a on and off again. And then this generation probably started off worse than the last one. So yeah, in terms of saying the lost generation, I would say we should wait and see to call this a lost generation, because if gaming never recovers, then it's not the only generation that's lost. It's pretty much the whole industry. Shit. So we'll see. We'll see what happens after this. I feel like we always sort of make the parallels to the movie industry, and the movie industry. I feel like recently they've been learning, not completely, but recently they've been learning that they don't necessarily need these inflated budgets to create movies. Like Godzilla Minus One cost like $15 million to make.
Yeah.
Right. And it's better, and it's got better effects than most $200+ million movies. And with video games, we've talked about this at length. Brett's mentioned it. It's like these games have such inflated freaking budgets that it makes gaming unsustainable. Not only does it make it unsustainable, it makes it so these companies are only looking for the profits instead of the game. It's like, does our game have microtransactions? Oh, we got to release this game at this date because we don't got any money left. We gotta delay it. It so many things. And it just doesn't benefit gaming. And then I feel like if you made smaller games that didn't cost as much, that are from quality studios, that have people that actually know what they're doing, and have creatives at the head that, have a vision, unlike, these games by a committee, then I feel like they can get back on track. But if we're just going the way of, hey, we're releasing a game that's a $300 million budget that takes 10 years to make, and you're not going to hear from us for fucking over a decade. I'm looking at Rockstar here.
Shit.
Then it's like, then, gaming is either going to be dead, or we're just going to be playing the same game for almost a decade, which happened with GTA 5.
I was just thinking about this with the whole Final Fantasy remake thing. The game started on PS3, didn't it? Like, didn't development start on PS3, then decided to go to 4? Because that happened again. It was supposed to be a PS4 game. Like, oh, make it for a PS5. So I wonder if it's going to repeat again. It was like, they start on PS5. Like, oh, we better make this for PS6,
Oh, yeah. The third remake is, I don't see that coming out on the PS5. Unless it's a cross-generation game. But
could be, yeah. But we'll see. Rich, what are your thoughts on the quote-unquote lost generation?
Well, I think we can all agree that the pandemic did impact a lot of things, the gaming industry, the entertainment industry. But I do want to say this, and this is just my personal opinion. Even if the pandemic did not happen, I'm not convinced that the Xbox strategy would have changed in any way, shape, or form. Now, I say this because Xbox had a lot of bad things happen to them as a company for quite some time. I looking at what they have coming out, the fact that they finally have a game coming out in May that's Hellblade 2, I'm not convinced that their strategy would have changed in any way, because normally when you look at Sony, yeah, when PS5 launched, there were some games. Now, we can say, yes, there were remakes, so on and so forth, and maybe one or two PS5 titles. But ultimately, when I look at Xbox and how Xbox launched, it's like, where the hell are the games at? And they've had multiple years this generation where they have had no games. They have Game Pass, yes. But I'm talking about the exclusive first-party studios of all those studios they have acquired. So it looks like, to me, their strategy was, this whole generation, let's just acquire studios and we'll start to release stuff eventually. But it doesn't feel as though they really had a solid plan for any of this stuff, because you got to have at least some type of software coming to support the system you just launched. So I don't know. But I will say this. 2023 was a very good year for gaming on every platform. I haven't heard one person complain about that. So I don't know if we're going to get any more of those years. Maybe 2025 is going to be a pretty good year. I have no idea. Then, of course, this year, we only know about a certain stuff coming out for the first half of the year. I have no idea what the hell is coming out the rest of this year. So we have to wait and see. But I would definitely say that, yes, the pandemic did impact the industry to an extent. But even as a company, you have to pivot. And obviously, people are adjusting, having to work from home and remote. And a lot of places have now, people are now going back into the office. So I understand there's a shift. There's been delayed in a lot of different projects. But, yeah, I am curious to see what happens from here on out as far as how it impacts the rest of the generation moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, because, again, usually, you know, since these games take so long to make, we know about them years in advance. And, you know, we've been struggling to answer what games are coming specifically for PlayStation beyond Wolverine. We're like, we don't know. We don't know. We'll see. All right. And the last question of the night here, unless somebody asks any more questions, is also from Kid Shack. Do you guys think the term live service is being used as a scapegoat to throw all games to show why this is bad or this is why I don't like it? Live service, the term being used as a battering ram against games, it's getting to the point of comedy, finding how many times I see it being used. I feel that if you throw the term live service around so many times, it starts to lose its meaning, just like the word woke, being used by probably the same people who use it because they found something they don't like. Interesting question there. No, here's the thing. You can't throw the label live service on a game you don't like if it's not a live service game. You know, like I can't be like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't like, random survival game. I don't like it. So it's this live service game. No, you can't. Like, there is a definition of what a live service game is. So anybody who is misusing that word is just technically wrong. You know, so I kind of disagree with the notion that people are calling games they don't like live service games. That makes no sense to me. I think what's happening is that there's so many live service games coming out now that flop that people are just talking about, like, hey, these live service games are kind of ass. You know, again, we had a bunch of them in a row. You know, Suicide Squad is just the latest one. But we go back a little bit, Marvel's Avengers, Anthem, you know, like the Bleeding Edge, and even to some extent, fucking Halo Infinite, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All of those are live service games. They're category live service games, and people aren't just calling them live service games because they don't like them. It's because they are live service games. They just also so happen to be bad, you know? Barry Burns says, you can call every mobile game a live service game, right? Yeah, and that's like me going, oh, yeah, I don't like that game. It's a mobile game because I don't like mobile games, so every game I don't like is a mobile game. No, so I don't think anybody's calling games that don't like live service games. Like, they have to actually be a live service game. If you're calling a single player game bad because if you don't like a single player game and you don't like it, it's a live service game. That's stupid. You know, because like it's not even online. You know, there are certain things that a live service game is. And if it's not that, then you can't label it, you know? So yeah, that's my answer. I don't know if anybody else wants to expand on that, you know? But it's an interesting question.
Live service is a term that could definitely be abused in terms of the way you categorize a game. Like,
I think live service as a genre is something that could be abused, you know? Anyway, I just had to throw that in there.
Oh, yeah.
I had to throw that in there.
No, that's definitely a good point. I mean, but, you know, you can say like, for example, what's it called? Elden Ring is a live service game because, you know, they're making a DLC that people are waiting for and you have to pay for it and all that stuff. So, like, you can stretch it out all the way to, like, that. But I wouldn't consider Elden Ring a live service game.
Nope.
But I'm just saying, like, that's something, like, you can, like, if someone wants to stretch it out all the way that to make it sort of semantically, in their opinion, be that, then they can. But I feel like live service games, you know, for the most part, the ones that we talk about have like a lot of things in common. Like, for example, sort of, they're not just a standalone game. Like, whenever you get a game, like, for example, Halo Infinite's probably the best example. Halo 3 came out with multiplayer, came out with single player, came out with Forge, and came out with a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, multiplayer, and it was a complete experience. And occasionally, I mean, eventually it would come out with some DLC for new maps and stuff like that. But it wasn't a live service game. But now at Halo Infinite, flash forward a couple of years, it's like you get part of a story, you get part of a multiplayer maps, and you don't get the, like you feel like you don't get the whole thing, or at least the main part of the dish. It's like, yo, you have to wait for it to grow, and the way you wait for it to grow is you keep investing into the game, you keep playing it online, and eventually you get new maps, eventually you get new stories.
I got a challenge here.
Uh-oh.
What is your definition of a live service game here? Because, like, I know that you're saying it's ambiguous, so, like, where is the line for you? Because as I've known it, a live service game has to have dedicated servers hosted by the company. That is part of the definition of live service, is that they're hosting a service. So, like, what is the definition you're going by?
Yeah, by the way, I'm kind of going with Brett on this one, because I'm like, I don't think live service is a nebulous thing. I think it's a pretty set thing what a live service game is. So what do you think it is?
All right, could you guys define it and see how it counters to mine?
I just did.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Halo 3 hosts its own servers. Is that a live service game?
It's you know what, that one's,
I mean,
a little bit
turned into one. Yeah, that's kind of the problem.
Yeah, they turned it into one. It's like, basically, like, Carlos, you know what a live service game is. Destiny, The Division, you know, a Suicide Squad. They all have very same characteristics.
GTA 5.
Yeah, the online portion. Yeah, GTA Online, yeah.
Anything with loot boxes.
Yeah, loot boxes, that's a must right there. GTA 5 doesn't have a hub though, does it? Like, where you play.
Here's the thing. Games like GTA and games like with loot boxes, they have to be hosted by a live person, because if you don't, or they have to be hosted by the service, because that's one of the ways that they maintain security over the content that you have earned or not earned, and keep from it's the reason people can cheat in Elden Ring, but you can't really just cheat in GTA. So it's not so much that it's, oh, if it has DLC in it, or if it has loot boxes in it, it's not so much that if it has loot boxes in it, it's live service, but you can't do loot boxes without it being a live service. Otherwise, people could just go offline and hack the loot boxes into the game. So, like, it's, I understand where the line can be kind of blurry, but I think the line is it has to be hosted online as a service by a company. So that was it. I'll shut up now.
No, it's a good point. I mean, that's why I feel like it can be ambiguous. A lot of people have different categories or definitions. I disagree with Tony. I don't think it's that set in stone what a live service is, because there isn't a concrete Webster's dictionary definition on it.
Yeah, there isn't. It's but just like more, if you know what it is, you know, like you and I specifically have played enough of them to know exactly what they are. You know?
Yes. Yes. And I feel like if we roll out 100 games, like just 100 different titles, I'm pretty sure we'll agree on like 98 to 99% of it.
Yeah.
On which one's the live service?
Yeah, some of them could be a little bit fuzzy. Some of them. But generally, generally speaking, a live service game has very specific characteristics. Like Brett said, you know, it's being hosted by the main company, some kind of, loot boxes, very repetitive type of missions that, you know, are conducive to playing with like multiple people and stuff. Repetition, yes. You know, drip feed loot as well. You know, that's another characteristic of it.
But like, for example, Helldivers 2, I think, doesn't have dedicated servers. I think that's peer to peer.
Yeah.
So, but that is a live service game, at least for me.
Yeah. Outriders, I would say
Helldivers.
No. Outriders.
Gotcha.
It is and it isn't at the same time. You know what I mean? It's like a normal game with live service shit slapped on top of it, you know? So that's what I mean, Carlos. There can be room for ambiguity as well. But like, the meat and potatoes ones, you know what they are. Destiny, The Division, Anthem, like you
Fortnite.
Know. Fortnite, yeah. You know, it's like, you know.
Yeah. So for me, if I were to define it, it's a game that relies mostly on time and microtransactions in order to sustain itself.
Yeah. Repetitive missions.
Yeah, repetitive missions. You can't have loot boxes, but loot boxes usually is in the part of the Venn diagram where it fits into that category.
Yeah, I agree with that. You could have a live service game without loot boxes, but you rarely see them without loot boxes, you know?
Yes.
But technically you don't really need them, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And for example, GTA 5, if you were to tell me, like, is it a live service game, at face value, it's not. But when you delve deep into the GTA Online, it most definitely is a live service game.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, and then, you know, to me, the other important aspect I mentioned earlier is the drip feed, you know, the carrot on a stick, you know. It's like, okay, I'm going to replay the same mission 50 million times in the hope that I get marginally better loot, you know.
I got a controversial question.
Uh-oh.
Is Mortal Kombat 1 a life service game? And Rich, you've talked about this. I know. I'm pretty sure you know where I'm coming from with this game. It's like, I feel like...
Carlos, I'm going to throw this at you. Are a lot of modern fighting games life service games?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just expand that while we're at it, you know? Oh, really?
Remember, the answer is yes. Now, when you say live service, you mean an always online component? Is that what you mean, Carlos?
No, life service as in, like we talked about, it's just a game that is dependent on repetitive gameplay and microtransactions to keep sustaining itself for a long period of time.
Well, yes, Mortal Kombat is definitely that. And I will give a shout out to, a few others, a few other OG Coalition members, Carl Daniel and... Eddie V, because we, you know, when Mortal Kombat 1 came out, we were talking about this game over and over again, you know, because we was excited to play the game. And then it's like, the story is so short. By the time you finish that game, you're like, where the hell is the content? There's no other content in the game. And then, of course, when you do the RPG mode, the invasions mode that they have you do, you're just playing the same repetitive fights over and over again. And of course, you can pay for coins if you want to unlock certain stuff. It's the same endless cycle. So I definitely think that's a lot. Some of that is definitely in Mortal Kombat 1. No doubt about it.
Kishak says all fighting games are live service. And he also says, I define it as constant updated and content.
That's an aspect of it. Absolutely. It has to be. That's like a core thing. You know, otherwise it's dead. Remember when Apex Legends... live service game, right? Remember, one of the criticisms at first was this isn't getting updated enough, you know. So that's an important aspect of it as well.
Yeah, and I feel like the fact that it's updated frequently is also a detriment to the original experience, or to the vanilla experience of the game day one, where you feel like there's lacking in content for a game that to just come out.
But you know what's interesting? Yeah. Like, even within the looter shooters, live service genre, there's still differences. Like, you would say Apex Legends is a live service game, right?
Yes.
And you would say The Division is a live service game, right?
Less than Apex, but yes.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying, where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
Very different type of games, though. Yes, they're both shooting games, I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, but one is more like a arena type of shooter, Apex Legends, and one is more of a little bit more of a open world exploring type of deal. But they both still dangle the carrot, you know, in front of you and everything, you know. Oh, maybe you get that shiny loot, maybe you'll finally get that gun you want, you know, with one percentage point more, you know, whatever. Man, I remember playing the first fucking Destiny, man. That's the shit that made me drop off. Like, I remember playing with the homies, you know, probably you, Carlos, and Brett, and all you motherfuckers all got the assault rifle I wanted, and I never got it. After 2 weeks, I'm like, I'm done with this shit, you know? Everybody got the same fucking gun but me. I'm like, I want this shit, you know?
I to be honest, I knew what it was as soon as I played that demo. I was like, what? Is that the loop? Or are we just, you know, trying to get more armor? Who fucking gives a shit about armor? I don't care about the armor. I just want to play through the story if there is any, and ain't even that.
Yeah, so barely it's
just
that,
like,
yeah.
Whatever. No reason to keep me around. It's just a bunch of like somewhat similar missions that end with a boss. And I'm like, this is stupid.
We played Destiny 2. We streamed it actually for on Twitch, and we beat the game. A couple of us, we did co-op, and we beat that in two sessions. And then I remember after that, where I was like, all right, so what's next? And I started playing with Adam. Shout out to Adam. And we just went to 3 different locations because those are the only locations where like little events would happen. And we would just go from one location to the next, to the third one, back to the first, to the second, to the third, to the first, to the second. We did that for like 3 or 4 hours. And I'm like, what the hell are we doing, man? we're just doing the exact same thing over just because we're waiting. We're trying to see what the hell is going to come out of from these enemies, like the loot.
That's what we were doing with The Division, man. We were playing that for a while. Don't get me wrong. We had good fun with The Division. You know, we even ended up getting to Platinum in the second game specifically. But it was just a lot of repetitious shit, you know. Hold on real quick. Some of the comments here. This is a good I'm glad Kishak asked us this question. This is a good conversation. Here we go. Fergus Mills, what's going on, brother?
And my shout out to Fergus Mills.
You know, get ready to hook us up with those PS6s, bruh. You know, he goes, also, all modern live service games provide additional content via seasons instead of old DLC method. Yep. Kishak says, you guys think Sony has found their games as a service unicorn with Helldivers 2, or would they need another one? They probably want another one for sure. Kishak, we talked about this on the last show. That the Helldivers is exactly what they want, bro. They that's why they have like, I know it's less than 12 live service games now, but that's why they're developing so many games, because they only need one to hit. You get that one hit, you're good. You know,
and the thing about Helldivers, and which is the smartest move on that one, it's only a $40 game.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and
probably
also
didn't cost them a lot either. You know,
it didn't cost them a lot, and that's purely the reason why they underestimated the player counts for that game, because they didn't think it was going to hit.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, why do you think they're developing so many live service games? Because they're not costing them a lot of money, you know? Again, if they can make a game for cheap and get a lot of money in return, they'd be perfectly happy, you know?
Exactly. You get so what you do is you create a live service environment. Well, you know, Destiny all pretty much taught everybody how to do, or is one of the ones that sort of taught people how to do this.
Yep.
You give just enough plot carrot to keep people going along, and then what you have is a consistent cycle of events that are fairly similar, that, you know, somewhat end off the same way, and then you get things.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about this with, you know, for example, Sea of Thieves and Fallout 76 and all of these other games. It's like we played those day one for the most, some of us did. And it's like No Man's Sky. It's like they're completely different games now. They got so much content. Fortnite has different modes and different games within the game. It's like the way that they evolve. It's like I don't know, but it's a different animal, man. It's not the gaming that we used to have, where it's like, all right, you know, the game comes out and that's the game, and you're gonna play it for 100 hours and be happy, or even in between, where it's like you get a game and then you might get a DLC or 2 or 3 if you're Fallout 3.
Kishak goes, I expect to see Helldivers 2 every state of play and showcase from now on. I wouldn't be surprised for sure. That's their runaway hit right now. You know, and but ironically, where's it most successful at? PC, you know.
I'm on it.
Very interesting, man. And that's it. It's gonna do it for us tonight. Good show. Do we have anything to plug? Rich, I'm looking right at you, sir.
Uh oh. Yes, we do have something to plug. Myself, Mr. Adam Vale, and Carlos Romero, we just recorded the premiere episode of The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Oh, shit.
Yes. Yeah. The Rick and Michonne show. We actually recorded that earlier today. The video was up, and it's also on the website. So if you are a Walking Dead fan, you want to know if the spinoff is worth checking out, I would encourage you to check out our podcast. We had a great discussion. Looking forward to continuing that. And yeah, stay tuned to the Coalition. There's quite a bit of things coming very soon. Reviews, so on and so forth. So yeah, stay tuned.
Good stuff, man. All right, that's going to do it for us. And we will be back on a regularly scheduled time on Thursday. You know, thank you guys for putting up with us on Friday. Although that was a good show, too, on Friday. You know,
Good stuff.
Good show, good show. Anyway, make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You could also find us on any podcast app by searching for Throwdown Show. That's two words, Throwdown Show. ThrownOutShow.com to listen to past episodes. And of course, we are now back on the YouTube. So if you watch this live and you like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when our shows go live every Thursday and Sunday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern over on Twitch and YouTube, man. For everything else, links are down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and 10 out of 10 by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
And Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good week, everybody.
You already know. GCDR, real quick. Dune 2 is Thursday. Is the panel going to see it? Yeah, Manny and I are going to go see it on Saturday, man. Going to be good.
I'm going on Friday.
Boy. Excuse me?
Yes.
All right. All right, guys. We'll see you, man. Later.
Arrakis.